All right, so where do we want to begin?
Well, we can start with one of my points or one of your points, either way.
Start with yours.
Okay, divorce. What do you think about, what do you just think about divorce in general?
I'm not an advocate of divorce. I believe that it's an option for people if infidelity has taken place, if there is like sexual or, you know, just major abuse. But I think that most people get divorced because of quote-unquote irreconcilable differences, and a lot of the things that they can simply work through and just choose not to. It's an easy out. I think that divorce should be the last stage, not the first. I believe in separation for the purpose of restoring your relationship. And if you can't do that, then you can divorce only based upon the two reasons to get out, or the one, which is abuse and infidelity. So, that's my position. I believe that marriage should be forever.
And why? Why does marriage need to be forever? What's wrong with a 5-year marriage? Or where you enter the marriage for 5 years and say, hey, I agree to do this for 5 years. If it's working, we can re-up for another 5. And if it's not, we can call it a day. And we already know how we'll divide our stuff.
So basically, the marriage certificate having a expiration date on it. There was a big discussion about that a few years ago. Should your marriage certificate have an expiration date that you renew every so many years? And I don't believe in that. I guess I'm coming from more of a traditional or biblical perspective that a marriage is a covenant. It's not just a contract that you can just decide, okay, it's not working out, it's over. I believe it's a covenant. Matter of fact, I was just thinking about this on the way here. It's many things. It's a contract, it's a covenant, it's a ministry, it's a partnership. But I just think that when you get married and now children come into the scene, I think that I don't believe in staying together for the kids because I think that's the wrong motive. But I think that when you have family, you should do everything you possibly can to restore that household, because the family, the breakdown of the family leads to a breakdown of a community. And we have a whole lot of broke down folks in broke situations because we have a man and a woman who can't come to terms and work things out and plan a life together that will benefit themselves, their children, and the society at large. So that's my position, and I can go deep with that. But I definitely am an advocate for marriage and sticking through and overcoming your challenges. A marriage is spelled W-O-R-K. It's going to require work, and people aren't willing to put in the work. If you gave your marriage the same... Go ahead.
Well, when you started your relationship, did it require work or did it work because you wanted to be in it and she wanted to be in it?
Well, when we first got into the relationship, no, it didn't require work because that was the infatuation phase. That's the time when you ignore all the things that you see that are potential problems because you have this wonderful in-love feeling. But love is more than a feeling, and when that feeling goes away or the infatuation goes away, that's when the actual work and maintenance takes place. Listen, you drive a car, Frank, every 2,000-3,000 miles, you got to get an oil change. If you don't, you're going to break your car. You're going to have to get a tune-up. You're going to have to check the air pressure in the tires. You're going to have to put the fluids in there. It requires maintenance. So if we think that we could just be in a relationship that doesn't require any type of maintenance, we're crazy. Everything will die. Everything will fall apart.
Well, why does it require? Well, the question I'm asking is kind of rhetorical, and that's, I won't even ask the question. I'll say it requires maintenance because if you don't maintain it, it'll break down. You won't have a car anymore. Now, if you, the same thing with a relationship, but you want that car. So if you want that car because you're getting something out of that car, then you have to maintain it, otherwise it won't run. Now, if you want that relationship, then it has to be maintained, shall we say, in order for it to survive. So, in other words, y'all have to interact. That's because that's by definition what a relationship is, some definition, some level of interaction. But
correct,
you really don't have to do much of anything else in order for a relationship to persist. You don't even have to live together. You could be married and not live together. And what is different between, and be happy. And what is different between the time, the day before you got married and the day after you got married in terms of what's important or what the covenant is or the commitment, any of that kind of stuff? What is really genuinely different?
Well, the thing is this. I believe that, and we talked about this on your show, that there's four seasons to a successful relationship: dating, committed courtship, engagement, and marriage, right? But each season comes with a different level of responsibilities, expectations, roles that you play. Like when you're married as a husband or a wife, you have to do things that you didn't even consider when you were just dating because you're in a different season. You know, you're dealing with bills, you're dealing with babies, you're dealing with family planning, you're dealing with all types of things that when you're just dating somebody, your money's your money, theirs is theirs, you can go to your home, they can go to theirs. You know, you don't have things that are now shared in one pot that you have to consider. You can make decisions. You can be like, listen, I'm going away for 2 weeks. I'll see you when I get back. You can't necessarily do that when you're married. You have to consider and consult your partner. So it requires a different set of skills. And you know, it's so deep. As a side note, there's so many women out there, black women, who swear up and down that, oh, I would make a good wife. You know, I have what it takes to make a good marriage. But they have poor dating skills. And my point is, the skills required to date are different than the skills required to be in a committed relationship, whether married or not married. Completely different. And because they don't know how to date, they never wind up getting to that marriage. And so you have to learn how to operate in each season in order for your overall marriage to work.
Each season knowing how to operate. There are relationships that don't, they're not good, they're relationships where they were good partners or even good married, but they have children and they don't co-parent well together. That's not so much a season, it's a component of relationships that you may be good at or you might not be good at. And to call it, go on.
No, I'm agreeing with you.
To call it a season, you know, that's an 18, 21, depending on how you look at parenting. That takes away from the length or importance of what's going on. It's not just simply, I mean, sure, life could be a season. You know, we could live a 75-year season, if that's how you look at it. But also, it's an opportunity to look and see at what's working and what's not working and make necessary adjustments without feeling guilty about it. And that is that really goes into what I should have on my list as another point. When you talk about broken relationships, broken families, the tag of broken, although it sounds powerful, and depending on who you're talking to, it is powerful, but the tag of broken is more destructive than the situation itself, in my estimation. So it with that term broken comes guilt that people feel about their family not being together in a quote-unquote traditional sense. With the term broken, it also, one of the things that it does not, is it is very dishonest about. And when I say that, I don't mean this personally. I mean this in terms of when I look at myself and anybody who may be using certain terms. But it is a way of justifying our own action. It's like married people or people who are promoting marriage use terms like that, but people who feel comfortable not being married or being divorced, they don't use terms like broken in terms of relationships. It's just we're not together anymore, or we have a different or non-traditional relationship, that kind of thing. So the use of the term broken itself is destructive. Please weigh in.
I understand your position. I guess when I imply, yeah, and you're right, it deserves clarity. Broken in the sense that if you are married, like for instance, if you have a child out of wedlock and you were not married, then that child is born in a single parent household and hopefully they have both parents. I feel like, as well as many of us turn out, there's still something missing that the child needs. The identification with both parents, that really affects their self-esteem, their self-worth, their self-identity, their everything. And if you don't have that, it can cause deficiencies. It can cause issues within your childhood and even into your adulthood. Likewise, if you're married and the relationship doesn't work from a covenant perspective, if the covenant has been broken and you two separate and that child's choosing which one to live with, for using those terms, it's a broken family, implying that something happened, it did not work, it cannot be fixed, it cannot come back together. So I'm open to changing terms and definitions for the sake of giving clarity to people, or I can hold on to that term for the sake of our dialogue. And your position could be, well, this is why I think the term is unhealthy, and this is why I think it is healthy based upon my clarification of my definition. But I just think that marriage, when you make that commitment, is the highest form of a commitment that you could ever make. And if God is in it, he's the glue that seals you together. And, I mean, even the scripture says that, what does that scripture say? Trying to think in my mind, my brain is on, like, slow. Whenever two of them, I'll come up with it. But basically it says that nothing outside of your relationship should be able to separate you or tear you apart if you have a relationship that is established based upon this threefold covenant. Listen, the reality is the three relationships that we all have, the one you have with God, whatever you call that, whatever that means to you, because you are spirit, the relationship you have with yourself, and then the relationship you have with the other person. So that's a threefold or three cord, a three-strand cord that should not be easily broken. Once again, that word broke. And I think if you have that and you have a real relationship with yourself and with God, it will help you in your relationship with your partner. Problem is, most people don't know themselves, they don't love themselves, and they can't give out what they don't have within them. And when I say broken, we come from horrible situations, our dysfunctional families, all of this mess, and we take that pollutedness into our future relationships, and we destroy them. So we bring in pain and create pain within our relationship. And that's why I think you have to be alone about yourself and become the best person that you could be, committing yourself to becoming, committing yourself to personal growth and self-development and healing from your past, so that you go in with a clean slate. You don't bring those issues from your past. And if both partners are doing that, then I think you have the foundation for something that's great. But, why, I mean, so many couples fail because they deal with stuff from three, four, five relationships ago that the other person brought in. So now I'm being held hostage to something that somebody else did to you?
But that would be a relationship that if it were that severe, that would be a relationship that didn't work because you wouldn't stand for it and you wouldn't be in that relationship. But
correct.
And you talk about pain, and the reason many of us bring pain into, I mean, I can't really say I know anybody who doesn't bring some degree of their pain into their relationship. However, it's often pain that brings us into a relationship. It's also our quote-unquote, if you want to use the term, and I probably on my best day wouldn't, quote-unquote deficiencies, that it's because of our deficiencies often that we merge with someone who has that skill that we may not have, we may appreciate with them. There's nothing wrong with that. That's often the actual reason a relationship comes. And no matter who you are, and given what you said, and at a certain level, I agree that this is possible, that if you're not bringing the quote-unquote stuff from past relationships or past pain, you can basically make a relationship work with anybody. Now, is that something that you want, or is it something that I want? I can't really say that that is of interest to me. Now, I like being flawed, having issues, you know, and having preferences in terms of the type of woman I'm attracted to, what I'm attracted to in that woman, possibly why I'm attracted to that, because of some past or some X, Y, Z. I mean, it boils down in many ways to chemistry. And she may have the same issue. We may go at it and work to resolve it together. She may not have the same issue, and we may complement each other absolutely perfectly. She may be passive. I may be domineering. She may be domineering. I may be passive. And either could be based on some past degree of issue, problem, pain. But if it works, it works. If it is where, if it's where we are, and if we, the two of us, are happy in our relationship, then, you know, what problems do I, being a third party, I have no particular relationship, and I can't really say I have a problem with much, with many relationships. As long as the two people in them are in them, as far as I'm concerned, it's working.
Well, my position is this. If you're going to be in a relationship, you should be happy and you should be fulfilled. A lot of times people are in situations and it works. The relationship is working. But sometimes the individuals within that relationship are dying. You know, I think there's a big difference between your relationship and your marriage. Your marriage is like that institution. It's like, you know, what you call yourself. It's just like it's a building, right? Just like a college or educational institution is a structure. It has seats and tables and chairs and teachers and students in it. Well, your marriage is that institution. It's like that building, that structure. But your relationship, you both are within. Your relationship is within that marriage. And some people have perfect, picture-perfect marriages on paper because things are in order, but they're dying emotionally. They have no connection. They have no passion. They have no love. And they settle for and they lose themselves. They lose their identity. They give up their dreams. But the relationship works. I mean, technically, you could look at Portia and the dude from Atlanta Housewives. Their relationship worked. Okay, so they made an agreement that she was going to be home and be the housewife while he go out and handle business. The house was going to be clean, this, that, and the other. And it worked. But she changed. She wanted something more. She wanted something different. And she was dying on the inside.
Well, it worked up until it stopped working.
Right.
And that's when they made an adjustment.
Because somebody decided to change. And that's a big issue. That's a threat to relationships oftentimes when a partner decides to change and the other partner doesn't go along with that change.
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that happening. You know, people change. And if that leads to divorce or split, I see why people have hard feelings about it. However, we have the unique opportunity not to have hard feelings about it and just simply say, hey, I understand you wanted something different than what we originally thought you might, what you originally thought you wanted. And we could talk about men on the down low and that, you know, in that same capacity. But we don't know who we're going to be from one day to the next, as much as we might try. And so to present ourselves to our partners as though we know, and worse, to actually expect our partners to be able to present themselves to us as though they know, it's problematic just completely, because it's we're searching for security and we're working towards having security that we cannot possibly have. And worse, we're trying to guarantee our partner's security so that in exchange for them guaranteeing us security. And that's deep, because you can't do either one, but yet we try. And then later on, we we are often so angry because he or she didn't do what they said they were going to do, he or she changed, when it was game from the very beginning to even think that they could tell us what they were going to be, and worse, to try to hold them to it. That's nothing but game. That's pimping at its best, and it happens on both from both sexes, with from both sexes.
So you don't believe in having a standard in a relationship that you both agree on and subscribe to, and try to hold on to for the betterment of the relationship, or everything's free fall. If you feel this way one day and another way another day, it's all good.
Give me an example of the first part in terms of having standards.
Okay. It could be as simple as let's say we make a decision about how we interact with members of the opposite sex. Okay. For the safety of our relationship, we're not going to entertain outside opposite sex relationships. When I say relationships, I don't mean sexual relationship, but just relationships, period. Like, if I am at work and I'm in the midst of a bunch of women and I'm only going to have a certain type of interaction with that woman, I'm not going out to lunch with her, I'm not entertaining her compliments, you know, I'm keeping it professional. Yeah, you can be friendly and you have conversations, but it stops there. Now, what if I decide to switch up and change that and, you know, I'm attracted to somebody, I get cool and comfortable with them. You know, I don't mind every now and then, let's go out to lunch, let's have a quick bite because we're working on a project together. And then all of a sudden, you know, you can get to open up and communicate, and communication is the foundation of all intimacy. And so now we're talking about things unrelated to work. We're developing a relationship, an emotional entanglement takes place, and bam, you're in a situation. So I deviated from the standard. You know, I deviated from what we agreed that we were supposed to do. I changed. I found a new way. I'm attracted to somebody different now. It is what it is. So do you agree that a couple should have standards and agreements of what they're going to do to keep their relationship strong? Or, you know, hey, if you're not happy and you just want to do this one day and do that another day, then it is what it is.
Well, two things. One, it was not obvious to me in the beginning when you said, when I talk about dealing with the opposite sex, I'm not talking about, you know, sexually. So that's not so obvious. And that's okay with me that it's not so obvious. But I just thought I'd point that out. And two, the first comment on the overarching question is, I don't even believe standards make the relationship stronger. So do I believe they should have them in order to make the relationship stronger? No. Now, you could create whatever standards you want. Do they make your relationship stronger? Absolutely not. Because what happens is, let's say you have when you create a standard with your partner, and we're talking about, quote unquote, a life partner or someone that you're with indefinitely. When you create a standard, we can look at it from a professional standpoint first. So you and I are going into business together, and we are going into business together. So, you know, we write up a contract. We say, you know, hey, if you do this, this, then this, this, you know, then this. If you don't show up at a show, I get all the money. If I don't show up at a show, you get all the money, you know, and we perform, you know, that sort of thing. We create agreements up front. Now, there's a difference between an agreement if then and just an open standard. Now, I expect us to have some if then agreements. And that works for me. And I even have, let me see, do I have, yes, I have if then agreements with my wife. But I don't expect, it's finite. It has a finite culture to it and nature to it. With what I hear you talking about, it's infinite. So with it's clear and concise. Yeah, you don't show up to a show, I get all the loot. There's nothing to discuss. Boom. This is our agreement. I say boom, no problem. you say, boom, no problem, and it's vice versa. I say to my wife, babe, or my wife and I agree, babe, if we split, then you get the house, or I get the house. It's clear, concise, we're there. But things like how you're going to interact with other people, women, things of that nature, that takes on a whole nother, what I'm calling, infinite culture. Because you're, in essence, you're asking the other partner to stop living. And with the finite stuff, you're not really asking your partner to stop living. You're just saying, if this, then that. So by all means, you could do that. Yeah, you cannot show up to a show. I'm not saying you can't show up to a show. I'm in fact saying, I'm not saying you cannot show up to a show. In fact, I am distinctly saying that you cannot show up to a show. It's just if you do, then you get the money. And there's nothing to argue about. There's no problems. We have it all ironed out. But when it comes to the loose things that you're talking about, we in essence are, like I said, we're stopping living. We are preventing our partner from doing a few things. Number one, experimenting. Number one, interacting with people. Number two, interacting with people. Number three, interacting with the opposite sex. Number four, even possibly having feelings for the opposite sex. And number five, being able to communicate those feelings about the opposite sex to you in a manner that displays to you that they're alive, they're growing, they're interacting, all of that kind of stuff. When we're talking about the infinite possibilities and you're asking them not to, again, I'll say it again, we're asking our partner to stop living in that capacity and only deal with me. And that's not fair to us, meaning the one side, and it's not fair to you being the other side. And we could throw it back on the professional side where it would be like me saying, Asani, you can't, you got to be at every show. We agree that you got to be at every show. Well, shit, that goes without saying to some degree. But if you don't, well, what happens? And when it becomes, I don't know, well, you said you'd be there, you let me down, you didn't do, well, even if your mama died or your brother's uncle's father died, you were supposed to have been there, and we lose the organicness of what can happen and the penalties or whatever have you in search of some security that we can never have.
Okay. That's very interesting. I think that would be a great conversation because we're on two totally different sides of the equation on that, and I think that would be a great conversation to have because I totally disagree. And
okay.
All right, so we were talking about standards in a relationship. You said it doesn't make the relationship better, and by having correct me if I'm wrong, by subscribing to it, it's kind of like locking your partner down and keeping them from living and being free to share and experience and communicate and things of that nature. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, good, because I totally disagree, and that would be a great discussion. Great discussion. So,
okay.
If you're cool with that, you can knock that down as number one.
Okay.
Divorce. That's another great one because though we both agree with it, I'm more hesitant and willing to go through a whole lot more before that becomes the final result. And I believe that the goal should be to stay together and to work through your situation. And you're slightly different. And I think that would be a good discussion because I'm fighting for you to stay. And for lack of a better term, I won't say fighting, but you're like, if it's not happening, then move on. And I shouldn't.
Right. I don't feel the need to fight.
Right. My thing is, I try to make it as hard and as humanly as possible for couples to say I do. Because the harder I make it for a couple to say I do, it won't be so easy for them to get a divorce.
Okay. Hard like what? What can you do to make it hard for a couple to get together?
Very good. My thing is, if I'm giving premarital counseling, I'm going to question the mess out of them to really know why they want to get married, to challenge them, bringing up multiple issues to see if they come together. A lot of times people get married because of a feeling. I just love them. But love is not enough. Love does not keep a relationship and doesn't make it happy. And if you two aren't on the same page, and if you don't have the power of agreement as it relates to how you raise your children and how you deal with your finances and conversations about sex and your tolerance level, roles, expectations, then your marriage is sure to fail because you're not going to have that in-love feeling forever. So that can't be the glue that ties you together. So by bringing up those and going through them and giving them challenges and homework assignments and having them work on their stuff, they'll quickly realize, wait a minute, I like you, but I don't know if this is going to be right for us. So if they can get through all the stuff that we kind of put them through and make it challenging for them and they still say I do, it won't be so easy for them to get a divorce because they haven't dealt with those issues. Most couples don't deal with things until it's too late.
And what does it mean for a relationship to fail? Oh, wait, before we could go there, was that the only thing you do in terms of, stopping them from being able to get married?
Well, not stopping them. I don't stop them. But what I'm saying is I try to bring up every hot topic, every uncomfortable subject matter, and force them to deal with it, you know, with their past, anything, whatever. Force them to deal with it. And if they can make it through those conversations and they still have that same feeling, then fine. I don't believe in your sessions and you're ready to go. Like most people spend, you know, a year planning their wedding and about planning their marriage, which is backwards. So, like, anything that I do, I'm going to try to give them enough that they can work on even when the sessions are over. And all the way up, my thing is most people do premarital counseling as a check-off to getting married as opposed to let me do this first to see if we're ready to be married.
We actually have a lot of agreement in there, but I'm sure there's plenty that we could play with where there's disagreement also.
Okay.
Now, what do you think, what does it mean for a marriage to fail?
What does it mean for a marriage to fail? It means that both people haven't worked together collaboratively in a way that they have conflict resolution to be able to overcome their issues, and they have all these irreconcilable differences because they're on two different pages, aren't willing to compromise, aren't willing to bend, you know, they've just become rigid, and their hearts have become hardened. Bitterness has set in, resentment has set in, unforgiveness has set in, and they move in their own direction. To me, that's an example of a relationship that has failed. My thing is like this. If you have some type of addiction or compulsion, you know, and you, there's just something within you. You're just wired in such a way where you can't get it right. Then, okay, you know, this is nothing I can do for you. There's nothing that you can do for me. It's over. But what I'm saying is a lot of times, a lot of the things that we fight over and refuse to forgive each other over are things that can easily be dealt with and overcome. And most people aren't willing to go through that process.
So a relationship that simply ends, whatever the reason is for ending, that is not a successful relationship.
I won't necessarily say that because on your show you asked me that question and I said sometimes you can have two people that are just in different places. They're, you know, and the relationship doesn't work, you know, for whatever reason. My position on rules of a relationship prior to marriage are different than rules of a relationship after marriage or while you're married, after you say I do. Because I just believe it is my core principle that outside of infidelity and crazy abuse, there's no reason for divorce. I just don't, because that's just what I believe. And, you know, people can call me crazy, they can call me a fanatic, but all this remarriage, second and third and fourth and fifth remarriages, I think are crazy, and statistics don't work in your favor. You know, you have around 55% for first marriages, then it jumps up to 67% for second marriages, and over 75% divorce rate for third marriages. So if you think, I'm going to just get divorced, find somebody else, and the grass is going to be greener on the other side, and you're pointing the finger and not willing to work on you and your issues and your drama, then you're crazy. And I think that at the end of the day, your spouse is not your problem. Your own sin or your own shortcomings or your own issues are your problem. And we don't spend enough time self-reflecting and getting ourselves together. We just want to blame everybody else and make them the scapegoat and wind up in the same, we run into the same situation that we just ran out of. Now, there are many examples, just so you know, of people who are crazy in their relationship, met somebody else, and then they have wonderful second marriages. So that does exist. It does. I'm not lying to that.
Okay, what if the spouse isn't the problem and you're in your third marriage and you didn't ever make the previous two spouses your problem? You just at some point said, no, it's clear that it's time to move on. What's the problem?
Well, what are you moving on? Why are you moving on? For what reason? Just because you just what grew out of love? Is that what it is? You just had a change of heart? Like,
this relationship is no longer working for me. I'm no longer happy when I'm around you.
Okay, so
there's no blame.
There's to blame, because if you're no longer happy, something happened to keep you from being happy. Either something within yourself that you're struggling with, or partner that your partner is no longer doing that they may have once have done that's keeping you from being happy. And I think it's important that you two have conversations and figure out, you know, what the root of the problem is, so that you both can come up with some type of solution to solve it. But just to say, you know, I'm just not happy anymore. I'm out.
But that's
just cowardly.
Well, that's assuming you have a problem with not being together. So if you come to if the day comes where you say, look, you know, this isn't working for me anymore, or you may even perceive that it's not working for your partner and say, this does not appear to be working for you. So what I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to call it a day. There's no blame there. You're not pointing the finger at anybody. And you don't have a problem with calling it a day. It's only a problem calling it a day if it's a problem calling it a day.
That's all well and good if you are dating, if you're in a committed courtship, and it's even problematic to me if you're engaged, because you're in the process of signing the deal and going all the way. But no matter what stage or level you're on, you need some form of communication, and you have to be willing to give the partner a chance to, for the both of you to work on it to make it better rather than just bouncing. I mean, some people are just blindsided, just like homegirl Portia. In that show, she was blindsided. She found out the divorce papers were filed through, what, social media?
Twitter.
Like, they didn't even have Twitter. They didn't even have a conversation. Like, to me, that's just totally disrespectful, and that has no value. You're showing you have no value for your partner. It's just wrong. For a person to spend however many months or years investing their time, their energy, their heart, their emotions, sacrificing or negotiating, whatever term you want to call it, themselves, in that relationship, and for you to have a quick, you know what, it's not working for me, I'm out.
But your position is only one-sided. So you said for a person to be doing this and for you to simply, number one, well, let's back up. I never said that they didn't work on it. I never said they didn't have conversations about it. I said at some point you come to the point where you say this isn't working. Now, that doesn't mean you didn't go through, you know, all of the, you know, counseling or whatever have you. But at some point the day comes and you say this isn't working. Now, given that, if you want to put Portia and her husband on the table, you can look at it a few ways. You could certainly look at it as, oh, she was done wrong, she found out via social media, or and that being a bad thing, you can look at it. We don't know. They may have, one of the things I talk about in my book, How to Gracefully Exit a Relationship, is having the discussion where you talk about, this is how I might break up with you. Hold on, just a second, please. Excuse me. So, are you there?
Yes, sir.
So you could easily, we don't know, and one of the things I talk about in the book is this is how I might break up with you. And it's a powerful thing. If you know your partner is someone who might break up with you via social media, and we don't know that she didn't know that, at least I don't. I mean, maybe, you know, somebody might have been there. I don't know. But if we don't know that she didn't know that, then it's not cowardly. It may appear cowardly if we accept a bunch of other assumptions, but she may very well have had that conversation. He may have said to her years ago, look, I might send you an email. I might send you a Twitter. Hell, my wife might, my mother might call you and tell you that I just went. I feel no particular obligation to you to break up with you in a certain way. He may have said that. And if he said that, there's nothing cowardly about it. It is straight up. And even if he didn't say it, we don't have to look at it as cowardly because she was in that relationship for a reason. There was something she was getting out of it. And all of us are getting something out of the relationships that we are in. At the time that one of the parties, either one, her or him, and in this case, really, you could look at him the same way. He was in the relationship for a certain, he was getting something out of the relationship, and when it stopped working with him, for him, he was out. And, or you could say it for her, you could, the flip you could say for her is she was in a relationship and her partner was no longer getting out of the relationship. What he wanted to get out of it, it was no longer beneficial for him, so he decided he was going to bounce. And there's nothing wrong with, I mean, well, you know, you can make a case of the way it's communicated to you, but bottom line, when the relationship starts to stop working, why would you even want your partner to remain in a relationship with you if the relationship isn't working for them?
Well, we can probably know that. Well, I have been married for 10 years. Now, just knowing how relationships work, women are the first ones. When we ask the question, who initiates marriage, it's always the woman. Women initiate it. They ask the question, when are we going to be married? When are we going to settle down? When are we going to start a family? Men just pop the question. That's what we do. We don't initiate marriage. But when you look at the statistics, over 70% of women, 70 to 97% of women initiate the divorce. I find that to be interesting. So they get married for whatever reason, and then all of a sudden, when things don't go their way, when they're no longer in love, when their emotions aren't being met, they want out. Now, they'll go through hell before I do and do anything to marry that man. But as soon as they marry that man and things go bad, they lose all their patience, they want out. So there have been times in my marriage, early in my marriage, where I wasn't meeting her emotional need. She wasn't happy. You know, she became mute, emotionally numb to me. And we had to have those conversations. And I had to be willing to say, you know what? Okay, there's some things that I've done. There's some changes I need to make because I need to give you the attention that you need or compromise or negotiate or whatever term you want to use in certain areas to give you the happiness that you once had when we first started. So we work towards doing whatever we can to accommodate the other person. Now, I could have been like, you know what, fine, yeah, I'm not meeting your need, bounce. Because she wanted out. But I didn't want that to happen. I guess it's because of my belief about marriage, my belief about divorce, and then my love for her. So, you know, if you're with a person who's just willing to just let go when trials and tribulations and hardships come, because they're going to come, then that's something you have to know up front. I think maybe it's important for two individuals before they get married to have the conversation about, so what are your thoughts on divorce? What is justifiable in terms of filing for divorce? What's your position? Because if they have two different positions, it may not work out. Because the first sign of anything, one is ready to sign papers, which could be problematic.
Mm-hmm. Now, I will. We're gonna do great together. I see this. One, if you ask me the question, what were grounds for divorce? My answer is simple, and it's because I want to. I don't want to be in a relationship anymore. And that's all, and that's it. That's all I need, and that's all you need for me to completely 100% support you wanting a divorce. And anything else is anything else is bullshit. So we get to the point where, what is it? What is it? So you say, you may say to your wife, hey, the things that I will initiate a divorce for is, as you said, infidelity and abuse. Well, the day comes where she disappears. Literally, she's gone for a year. She just up and leaves. Now, you never saw that shit coming. But that's not one of your rules. That's not one of the things that you said were grounds for divorce. But now you're out here, you don't put your ass out and said that, you know, this is what you would initiate a divorce for. That's not on the list. She, in essence, can hold you accountable for that. And for what? What really would be the point? You're not happy.
Well,
she's gone. Now, and I mean, it doesn't have to be something so extreme. The point is, you may very well not see what will bother you in six months, a year, years.
That's a good point. Now, just for further clarity, getting biblical, the Bible clearly says infidelity, and it says if you marry an unbeliever who refuses to stay. That's technically what it says. So in that case, if she bounced and was gone for a year, she's refusing to stay. You know what I mean? So yeah,
okay.
We can get technical. And that's a great discussion. And that challenge is a good challenge that I would love to have. But you're right. You never know what your tolerance level is going to be 6 months from now, a year from now. You're right. But I can't operate out of my emotions. And I think that's the problem. I think that we need to have what I call emotional intelligence as it relates to our relationships. And if we allow our emotions or how we feel to dictate and govern our decisions, we will always make bad decisions. There's got to be a balance between your heart and your mind. And sometimes your mind's got to kick in, and you got to use logic and reason when you're emotional, because there's nothing logical about your emotions. There's nothing logical about it at all. And so I think you need that combination of both. But, I mean, to your point, it's a good point you're making, but at the same time, there's just no way in the world that I'm going to sacrifice and get, because that means if I was with you for 10 years and all of a sudden you decide I want out, I just wasted 10 years of my life. Head to the
No, that's exactly the destructive attitude that many of us take. You're not wasting. I don't, under no circumstances do I want a woman to be with me because she is sacrificing or anything like that. You are with me today because we want to enjoy today together. If you're with me 10 years, if I'm with you 10 years, I didn't lose or give up those 10 years. I had a ball during those 10 years. Which story are you going to tell? Are you going to tell the story that we had a ball for these last 10 years, and the day came when it was over? Or are you going to say, woe is me, I can't believe I put 10 years into the relationship, I wasted 10 years of my life? There's no way I will tell that story about wasting 10 years of my life. And add to that the comment about emotional intelligence. Well, again, never did I say what went into the decision to call it quits. I'm just saying the day comes where you decide to call it quits. So we're not talking about an emotional blow-up. At least I'm not, by definition, talking about an emotional blow-up. I suppose somebody could be there in that place and it's fallout like that. But we could very well be talking about a person who has gone into meditation for 10 days and comes out of meditation and says, I think it's time for me to move on. There are all types of things that could lead up to that that don't have anything to do with an emotional blow-up. So let's not assume it's about an emotional outburst. And if you want to jump in, but I got one more thing also. You said women initiate divorce, and I love this topic. How do you determine when a divorce is initiated? And I know we're going to have a ball with this, because is a divorce initiated when the person goes to the courthouse and says, you know, writes on a piece of paper and signs it and says, let's begin divorce proceedings, is that when the divorce begins? Or does the divorce begin when a person makes a decision that this relationship is no longer a relationship that I must be in, and I will conduct myself as I want to conduct myself? Hit it.
Frank, hold on one second. One second, hold on.
Okay.
Frank, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. I believe that the divorce doesn't begin with going to the court and filing papers. No, that's a part of the process. That would be the end. That's the ending of the initiation portion. It begins with a conversation, I guess. But what I'm saying is, I say that to say, usually the desire for divorce comes from the woman. A lot of times women will stay in relationships for a long time before they get to that point. They've just become fed up and can't take anymore. But usually men are oblivious to what's going on. You ask a woman, so scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate your relationship? A 2. You ask a man, on scale of 1 to 10, how do you rate it? A 10. It's perfect. They're just clueless. They're clueless. So there's a lot that men do wrong and a lot that women are no longer willing to settle for, as well as things that they do wrong that lead to that. But they are the ones that initiate it. That's just a statistical fact. But
no, I can't go there with you.
Good. That's
so go on. If I interrupted you for this upside. Go on.
Okay. That's what makes this a great conversation, because it goes back to the concept of the book His Needs, Her Needs, and meeting the emotional needs of your partner. So if we know that most men typically don't do relationships, we do sports, we do extracurricular activities, we do games, we don't do relationships, we don't know how to emotionally connect, we don't know how to...
I don't know that.
Communicate. I'm speaking in a general sense. These are the things that women claim that they have a problem with regarding their men. They cheat, they don't commit, they don't open up and talk, there's no open and honest communication, he's always lying, he's holding things back, he does, you know, he whined me, he dined me when we first met, he doesn't take me out anymore, he doesn't dress up, he doesn't take care of his appearance, he doesn't take care of his health, all of these different things. So what happens is her emotions begin to subside. She no longer has that in love feeling, and women are driven by their emotions. And when you said emotional outbursts, I didn't mean emotional outbursts like we just got into a heated argument and it's over. Emotions can develop and get worse over time. You know, when you put your mind on something, if you focus on something that's negative, it will stir up your emotions in a negative way. You put your mind on something that's positive, you begin to develop happy and positive emotions. And so what happens is women, they don't forget. They meditate on things. They analyze things. You know what I'm saying? And so they get to a point where they just can't take it anymore. There's nothing within them. They're empty. They're void. And they're out.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Now, I got to go back to, when does the process start? Because clearly, we're having masculine-feminine type of conversation. And as you look at when a man gets to the point where he says, you know, I really don't give a shit. When a man gets to the point where he says, let's say, a man knows his wife or woman would be upset if he had sex with somebody else. But he does it anyway. It's easy to make the argument that he initiated the divorce. It's very easy. She gave him an ultimatum. If you do this, I will do this. And he did it anyway. Well, you could say that's the beginning of the divorce. Easily. To add to that, your argument was, you said that the desire for the divorce... You said the women are the ones with that often have the desire for the divorce, but you also quoted research that said women are the ones that initiate the divorce. Well, they're not the same. The desire for the divorce, again, and what I illustrated, could very well be either party's. The initiation is,
I got you.
In research, the initiation would have to be some concrete milestone. So it would have to most likely be when they go to the courthouse and fill out the application and sign it. two very different things. And men may just feel, men may easily get to the point where, look, she don't give a shit about what I want anyway. I'm just going to go and do what I want to do. If she wants to bounce, she wants a divorce, no problem. She gets the divorce. I'm not going to initiate it formally in that manner, but I am going to go over here and get me a side piece. And if she want, if you or anybody else wants to consider that the initiation of the divorce, so be it. Who cares? I think we can go. I think we could play with that one pretty far.
I think that would be a great cut. I agree with you. Proceed.
Well, I was just looking at my notes. Anything you got?
Yeah, a lot. Hold on a second. Oh. Okay. We could deal with open marriage. That's a whole other world. Because I know you, I shouldn't say I know. I guess I'm assuming I know what your position is on that based upon how lightweight you challenge these dudes who come on here with that position. I hear your conversations with your co-hosts and then the questions you ask, which gives me the impression that you're open to that or don't necessarily see anything wrong with that.
That's correct.
Okay, well, we don't even have to spend time talking about that, but that right there, that's fire right there.
That's hands down not what Hassani is signing on for. Okay, so let's talk about it a little bit so we can at least know where to extrapolate as we move forward. I'm all for relationships that work, period. That's all that I want in relationships. That's all I want in your relationship. That's all I want in my relationship. That's all I want to see. I want to see relationships that work. Now, if an open relationship works for you, I say roll with it. And there's nothing wrong with it. Many people will say, well, if you want an open relationship, why get married? And the simple answer to that is because you want to be married. So it's I have no problem with open relationships. In fact, I think there's a degree of communication, open, honest communication that comes with open marriages, that almost has to come with open marriages, that many, quote-unquote, non-open marriages can't have because or don't have because they have set up boundaries of things that they really can't communicate about, can't talk, can't discuss, and that would hurt the other's feelings. With open marriage, one of the things that goes to the absolute core and of each sex's, not just one or the other, each sex's fears are the sexual who the other person's having sex with, or the fact that they might be having sex with one another or somebody else. That's such a component of fear for most of us. Yet in open marriage, you have to, at some level, address that. You can say to your partner, damn, he's fine, or damn, she's fine. Things that you, most of the time, can't say in a non-open relationship. You can say to your partner something that's even more incredible. You can say, you're an excellent lover. One of the things that I get from you that I don't get from anybody is the way you touch me, or the way you do this, or the way you did. And you have something to compare it to because you have other lovers. And there's a degree of openness and genuineness and non-limitation that comes with that form of relationship. I can appreciate it at some level.
Interesting. Let me ask you a question, Frank. Is sex just physical?
Absolutely not. Well, the act of sex, a penis and a vagina, you know, heterosexual sex, is just physical. Now, if you want to talk about...
What about homosexual sex, since you brought that up?
Well, okay, so is homosexual sex just about sex? I mean, just the physical? Yeah, the act of putting a... Well, for men, the act of putting a penis and...
Hold on one second, Frank, hold on one second. Checking out. I think I was in the office over there.
Oh, okay. You love me.
Headed for it.
Got
Pets afford. Pets afford.
Pets afford?
Yeah.
Okay.
Come back. I just need to get my bag. Okay. Yeah.
He just came back. I'm going to let him and I don't pick up his stuff.
Pettiford.
Pettiford.
Pettiford. Pettiford.
Got you there.
Can I let him in? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's, you don't want to let somebody else in your room.
I appreciate that. I'll be 5 minutes and I'll be out.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry about that.
I'm all behind on schedule. All
right. Yeah, so the question is, so homosexual sex can be just physical but not heterosexual sex?
No. I was saying, when I was said that, I was talking about the actual parts. So when I said with heterosexual sex, a penis and a vagina, yes, it's only physical. That's if you're talking about just sex. And with homosexuals, and you're talking about men, the penis and the anus, that's only physical. I mean, yes. So, but now if you want to go deeper and you don't want the term to just be sex or physical,
then we can certainly
talk about some money.
Now, that is a conversation. That is a conversation for you. I think that we could spend a good half hour, I don't know how, or whatever, on just that alone. It's because I think so many people are having sex today, and they've become so carefree and cavalier, and it's just an extracurricular activity, and it's just something good to do, and that's why I can have a one-night stand, and it's no big deal, because it's just physical. But there's no way in the world that it's just physical. It is physical, emotional, spiritual, psychological. I mean, just look at food. You could say, well, if I eat an apple, I'm just physically eating an apple. All that does is affect my body. That's not true. Food affects your emotional state. So you can't separate and compartmentalize who you are. You are, forget religion. Forget that for 1 second. Let's not even bring that into the equation. As a human being, you are comprised of 3 things, spirit, soul, and body, period. I don't care if you're an atheist. I don't care if you're a Hindu, Buddhist, whatever. That's the universal belief that you have a spiritual essence, your physical body, and you have a soul, which is where your mind, your will, your emotions, your imagination, and your memory all resides. So you can't enter into a physical act and just be like, oh, this just affects my physical body. Heck to no. It affects your emotions. It affects your mind, your spirit, your everything. And so I think that's the big mistake that we make as adults, thinking that, oh, I'm an adult. I can make the adult decisions. And if a one-night stand is for me or if an open relationship is for me, then as long as it makes me happy, it's all good. But you don't realize the implications or the consequences or the residue that comes along with that type of decision. Or lifestyle, or behavior.
Well,
so, go ahead.
I was very careful in my answer. And I said, if a penis goes into the vagina, yes, that's strictly physical. Now, you're talking about, the thing is, sex is, number one, I believe sex is a conversation. Period. And any time you interact with another human being is an interaction of mind, body, and spirit. Anytime, walking down the street past somebody, the person that you just talked to at the front desk, there was an interaction between mind, body, and spirit. So we need not relegate that simply to sex and to act as though sex is just simply the only time that we might have consequences or, you know, fallout between the interaction of 2 people. It's just not the case. It happens all the time. So, but sex is picked out. That kind of heaviness is applied to sex to make a point or to establish some level of guilt in people, and it's not necessary. In essence, yes, the actual act of putting a penis in a vagina is a physical one, but sex itself between people, no, that's, you're certainly right. It's bigger than that. But where you go, where you take it in terms of there being consequences and repercussions? Well, yes, there absolutely are, just like everything else we do. So it's really not any deeper. Is sex fun? Yes. Well, that's a reason to do it. That's a reason why a lot of people do it. That might be a reason why I have sex with my wife or you have sex with your wife, because it's fun. To act as though it's not is absurd. It is fun. Now, if people are, and to act as though people don't know what the ramifications are or what the possible consequences are of sex, it's not genuine. Because if you were to ask people who had one night stands, what are some of the possible, and none of us know what all of them are, but if you were to ask some people who would have had a one night stand last night, what are some of the possible ramifications that could come of a one night stand? Well, I bet they can give you a hearty list, each of them, most of them. We could have had a baby. I could have got pregnant. Or I could have had a woman who I could have impregnated a woman I can't stand. I could have got an STD. I could have, you know, it's all types of, there are all types of reasons, and people know this, yet they do it anyway. So it's not to make the argument as though people are acting ignorantly. Well, it's not fair because they know what the ramifications are. Now, you could say they're acting in a manner that you don't like or you don't think they should, but ignorance is really...
I don't agree that it's ignorant, because you're right. They are aware of the consequences, but they, a lot of times, act against their own best interests, because if these consequences are very probable based upon that activity and you're willing to take the risk, fine, take the risk, but deal with it when it happens. Don't, you know, my thing is like, well, without getting into all that whole thing, but the point is, I think that we make decisions that don't work in our best interest because we're more concerned about how something's going to make us feel, whether emotionally or physically, than looking at things from a logical perspective, as I said. And when you make feelings based upon emotions or how, you know, some sexual trigger, then you could be putting yourself on a path to destruction, and many people have done that.
You're right. Many people haven't and done the same thing. And when you say the best interest, people not acting in their own best interest, well, it's their own best interest as determined by who and when. If you were to ask me what's best for me right now, I could be thinking along the lines of, let me invest in talking to Hassani right now because we're going to put together a show that we're going to kick off in September that's going to go, it's going to run for the next couple years, and it's going to bring us millions of dollars. That could be why I'm doing what I'm doing right now. Or I could be eating a sandwich, and that's good for me. I need to eat. Well, you know, are either one wrong? And they're both in my best interest. So it's up to me to check in. It's up to whoever is looking to check in with me and see what's important to me. And most likely what's important to me in this moment is whatever I'm doing, whatever my level of consciousness or awareness is. You can look at what a person's doing and tell what's important to them.
That's
and if when we start, go on.
No, I agree. That's very true.
When we start trying to make the case that it's what a person should be doing X, Y, and Z, well, then we're not in tune with them. We're basically telling another person how we think they need to be conducting their lives. And I don't agree with that.
But, Frank, what I do not only affects me. It affects my wife. It affects my children. It affects my children's unborn children. There's so many things, whether you want to get spiritual or not, whatever, generational blessings, generational curses, things that we do as individuals that have a profound effect on generations to come, destiny decisions. I have a sister who's no longer here today, who left two children behind. Those children are affected by the decisions she's made. They're growing up with a certain pattern, belief system, custom, self-esteem, whatever you want to call it, that are affected by the decisions that my sister made when one of them was yet unborn. And so it's not just about our own happiness. I got to think about those that are looking at me, relying on me, depending upon me, those with whom I influence. I have an organization that I run with my wife. I can't afford to cheat on my wife for my own physical pleasure, because not only does it affect my wife and my children, it affects all of the couples that are looking to me for inspiration and hope to know that they can make it through their situation. So it's not just about me. And if I take that approach, that's really anarchy, where everybody lives according to their own rule, their own list, their own that. Nah, that's why we have community. That's why we have government and laws to protect us from ourselves, to protect the greater good of humanity and society. I think that everybody should have something that they submit to. Everybody. Because if you don't, that's straight up anarchy.
I agree. However, I agree that it's good for everyone to have something that they say, all right, I'm listening. I'll do what you said. I agree with that. The other part is, are you telling me if your wife said to you, do whatever you want to do, you would act in a way that would be, that would not be quote unquote in your best interest?
Well, because I have a desire, for instance, let's just say I wanted to cheat on my wife. I just wanted to. Like, I just wasn't in that place where I'm willing to sacrifice and be committed for the greater good. And she says, go and do what you want to do. Like, I know couples where the wife isn't giving up sex. She just made a decision. It's not happening. Go ahead and sleep with somebody else. I don't care. Have your thing on the side. I could care less. You are not getting that part of who I am. And that may work technically for them at that season in their relationship. But it could lead to problems, just like the whole open marriage thing. Just like your guest who said that jealousy is something that they battle with on a consistent basis because they get jealous. You know, if I'm doing you and then I let you go out and this other dude does you in a way that I can't, that creates jealousy. That affects the person's manhood. That can creep up in your relationship and cause a serious problem. And so I'm just saying that we have to make decisions that are in the best interest of really all parties involved. And if you don't, then you can't make that decision. There's a principle that I was taught, that I live by, called joint agreement, the law of joint agreement. And that means, now this doesn't work in every situation. It doesn't. There are no absolutes to everything, to anything. But the principle is there should be an enthusiastic agreement amongst partners on a decision that is made. If I want to do something and my wife is just struggling and fighting and fussing her way through a yes, then that may not be the best thing for us to do. That may not be the best decision for us to make. For instance, say I want to move into a particular home and she's not sold on it, and I'm giving her all these reasons as to why we should, as any other, and she's just like, I really don't like it, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like the neighborhood, I don't think it's good for our kids, but if you say so, go ahead. That's crazy. That doesn't work in our best interest. So I got to consider her and consult her about doing what's
awesome.
Best for us. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. So that's across the board as it relates to anything and everything, in my opinion.
I agree with the decision to make decisions that are in the best interest of everyone. Where we falter is thinking that another person is not thinking that way. Like, how do I, and then judging them as though you know. So I don't know what's best for you. And on top of that, I don't know whether you are doing whatever you think you're, whatever, I don't know whether you're doing whatever you're doing, believing that you're doing it with the best interest of all parties involved. And everything, every single thing you do can be second-guessed by everybody in your circle and beyond your circle. Everything. At some point, we stop second-guessing one another and we simply believe that our partner's doing the best that they can with the information that they have, and we support them in doing it. Because if we don't, we are more or less telling them, don't live your life the way you believe you should live it. I want you to live it the way I want you to live it. And I'm not comfortable telling anybody that, and I'm not comfortable with anybody telling me that. And if you look at the way I conduct myself, if you look at the things that I do for myself my family. I do them because I think it's best for me. It's what I believe is best for myself and all parties involved. And I believe myself to be the head of my family, and it is my responsibility to make sure all the people in it are taken care of. Now, that is my way of looking at me. And if someone else has, as a father or a husband, looks at their role differently, because I have such a strong perception and view about how I see my role, I am free and comfortable with someone having a very different perception about how they see their role without me telling them that they're wrong. And worse, without me saying to them, you are not taking everything into consideration. You're not taking all parties into consideration. That's not fair. It's like hitting below the belt.
Well, maybe that's not the right person for you. And I believe in the power of joint agreement. Even the Bible says, can two walk together unless they be in agreement? And it's not about necessarily forcing your will on somebody or vice versa, but it's making sure that you're connected with somebody where you easily flow in the same direction. Now, my wife and I don't agree on everything, but in the general sense, we were just talking the other day about how, you know, every relationship that is successful has their own secret sauce, whatever it is that makes it work. And we were thinking, like, what is
it
that makes us work? There you go. Mm-hmm. What makes us work is the fact that generally we're on the same page. We have the same value system. We agree on a lot of the same things. We're moving in the same direction, so it's just easy. Whereas my ex, who I was in a five-year relationship with, we battled on everything. So no matter what we tried to do, it just was confrontational. It wasn't going to work. Thank God I didn't marry her, because we would be divorced. And so that's what I'm saying. Like, so many people ignore what's staring them in the face and go ahead and make stupid decisions that don't work in their best interest, and then they wind up paying for it. Divorce is expensive. It's emotionally taxing. It has a profound effect on any child, if there's children that came from that relationship. And so those are all the factors you got to really think about before you select your partner. You can't base it on how good they look and how good they make you feel. That's not enough. That's not partnership.
I agree. However, I'm not going to tell the people who do that they're wrong. That's their journey. You set forth one foot in front of the other, and let me know how it goes.
That's like, you know, that's just like, all right, well, listen, I put my hand over that fire, and it burnt me. You know, I have third-degree burns now. My skin will never be the same. But, I mean, hey, if that's what you want to do, go ahead. Knock yourself out. If that's good for you, that's good for you. I don't agree with that, because I think that we have a responsibility to let people know what to and not to do that may help or hurt their situation. And that's why they're looking at you for advice. That's why they tune into your show. That's why they read your books, because they want to know what they haven't figured out for themselves.
We have an obligation to, if we're going to call it an obligation, we have an obligation to share, not to tell. So I am, because I'm on my own journey in my own circle, and trying to figure it out myself. If we are in the process of telling people what they should be doing, we're ignoring their extenuating circumstances. I don't want to do that. I will tell you, look, this fire is hot. I got burns. Here are the burns. Check them out. If you put your hand in there, you'll probably get burned too. Don't know for a fact, but you'll probably get burned too. Now, they may say, well, I'm over here working on a secret sauce, secret formula to stop me from getting burned, and I'm willing to take the chance. And I'm going to say, enjoy. Let me know how it goes. I support you fully in your endeavor.
Interesting.
I think we got plenty to go from right here.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. It's gonna be
good. So, are you complete, or is there more you wanted to discuss?
There's always more.
I mean, but I think we have a great foundation.
Okay. All right. The general way I see it unfolding is a half hour. We basically get a half hour each of banter. You know, it'll be going back and forth. But we both basically take up a half hour, and then we leave a half hour open. So that's an hour. And then we leave a half hour open for questions and answers from the audience that gets filtered to whoever we have in the audience. We ask them to write down their questions, and then the person that we may have in the audience, or there may be a moderator who comes up at the hour limit and begins to pick the questions that they believe that we, you know, that we'll do a good job with. Any thoughts on that?
I think that sounds great.
Okay. In terms of starting with, I'm going to get this conversation transcribed. That's what I'll do. And from there, we can begin to pare down our extra words, you know, things that where I might have repeated myself. I tend to do that. Or even where we could use some further clarity. And, you know, and we can begin to, you know, start going back and forth, our memorization process, or start putting a production together. But let me get this transcribed.
Sounds good. All right, I'll get this over to you.
Okay. Any general thoughts?
I'm ready to rock and roll. I think I've never done anything like this before, and I think it would be great. It's unique. It's different. Usually, you know, this battle of the sexes, men versus women, and that's just so trite and old and played. You know, this one.
Right.
But this, I think this is something new and fresh that would be quite interesting. And, you know, when you have an audience who's split, you know, there's those that are in love with your position, those in love with mine. It just makes the energy in the room, and, you know, it's just, it makes for a phenomenal environment to really have a discussion. And then when you have people weighing in and giving their opinion, it's great. I could see it happening all day long.
My man. All right. I will, it'll probably be a week before it's transcribed. I'll get it to you as soon as it's done, and we roll from there.
Done.
Okay, all right,
man.
I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you.
Later.